it's been nearly 40 years since a movie character and fictional news anchor took to the airwaves to express his anger, and the sentiment he expressed is one many people relate to today. Let's take a listen.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
That's Howard Beale, the fictional news anchor from the 1976 film Network, a satirical look at media corporations and television news. At the same time, it's been seen as maybe an eerily accurate prediction of what was to come in the decades that followed. Our next guest says that such a movie rarely gets made anymore. One man's vision of the world, independent of studio testing or market research. In a new book, he tells the story of Paddy Chayefsky, the man behind Network, as well as how the movie got made, its lasting impact, and how the movie's vision panned out in the media landscape. Joining us now is Dave Itzkoff. He is a culture reporter at the New York Times, and his new book is Mad as Hell, The Making of Network and the Fateful Vision of the Angriest Man in Movies. Dave, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much.
Let's start with that famous bit from the movie we just played there. If you could count up all the times it's been quoted, misquoted, paraphrased, and parodied, it's probably one of the most influential single lines in movie history. What is it about that that stuck with us and maybe still resonates today?
Sure. Well, you know, I think when the film was released in 1976, I mean, that moment and the language of the speech, all the things that, you know, Howard Beale is sort of rattling off about, you know, the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. I mean, those were very real issues that the country was going through. And I think there was a lot of repressed frustration going on at the time. And, the speech itself seemed to be saying, well, I mean, if you can't do anything else, at least you can get angry. That's a place to start. And, you know, certainly America has not calmed down very much in those past 40 years. Different issues, but plenty of things to be frustrated about. And so, you know, without maybe looking too deeply at what the speech is really saying, they're easy words to fall back on.
For people not familiar with the movie, let's bring them on board. Can you give us a synopsis of what it's all about?
Sure. So the story of the film is triggered by this television anchor, Howard Beale, who's played by the actor Peter Finch, who is working for a fourth place broadcast network in an era when there were really only three broadcast networks. The anchor is told that he's going to be fired, and so he threatens, in the middle of one of his broadcasts, to commit suicide on the air in a future show. And this sort of triggers a conflict within the network between its sort of old-school news director, played by William Holden, who wants to make sure that Beale doesn't go on the air and continue to rant and rave, and between a sort of new generation of entertainment and programming executives, sort of specified or typified by a character played by Faye Dunaway, who very much wants to keep Beale out there, realizing that the angrier and more insane he gets, the better it is for the ratings of his show and for this declining network.
So Paddy Chayefsky wrote the movie, and it doesn't seem like this happens that often. This is a movie in the writer's voice, right? Usually if you want to be a writer and have the movie be yours and under your control, you have to be writer/director. How did he get this kind of influence over the movie he wrote?
Well, I mean, it was something that he had to build up over a span of, you know, nearly 20 years. People might remember him also as the writer of films like Marty, which,
great movie, yeah.
Of course, won, you know, the best picture Oscar and best screenwriter Oscar in 1955. But that was more of a kind of a personal drama, a story about, you know, a lonely butcher looking for love in the Bronx. And in the 20 years that followed, I mean, Chayefsky would continue to write those kinds of personal stories, you know, for film and for theater. But I think as his worldview expanded, as he became more aware of what was going on, I mean, he certainly felt a kind of obligation to take on, you know, broader topics in his writing. And certainly, I mean, he was always very concerned in his own career just about protecting his control over his work and his ability to make sure that, you know, what he put down on the page was what got onto the screen. And so, you know, I mean, he fought tooth and nail in a lot of scenarios to, you know, make sure that these, the projects were handled the way he wanted, and would walk away from things if he felt that he couldn't get the autonomy that he felt he deserved. So, by the time 1976 rolls around, he's definitely, accrued a lot of power.
you looked at his notes, Chayefsky's notes in the writing of this movie, and one thing you highlight is the thought, this movie doesn't have a voice or a perspective yet, but the one thing it had going in it was anger. Can you talk about this film as an expression of Paddy Chayefsky's anger?
Sure, sure. I mean, that was a document that he wrote to himself, you know, probably in 1974 or 75 as he's composing the script and kind of getting frustrated with himself. And, you know, I mean, he was such an amazing self-editor. I mean, not the kind of person who really shared a script with, you know, his producing partner or with a studio until he really felt it was done, at which point it was, okay, let's just roll the cameras. I'm not asking for your notes. But, you know, I mean, as I was saying earlier, I mean, there were a lot of things that frustrated him. I mean, in his private life, he certainly had a kind of fractious relationship with both his wife and his son and kind of escaped into his work. And he was also kind of, you know, very politically attuned and almost, you know, by the 1970s to a kind of paranoid degree. I mean, not only with what was happening in America, but around the world and in the Middle East. And, you know, so, I mean, all of these concerns and, you know, fears about, you know, corporate influence over media and you know, the ability of, you know, multinationals to buy up these corporations. I mean, all these things are kind of weighing upon him. And you know, he really feels he's got this duty to somehow tell one story that's going to get at every single one of these ideas. And I mean, it's quite a mammoth task. And yet, you know, he does almost kind of pull it off.
And this network anchor, Howard Beale, was in a way just expressing that same kind of raw anger. And on the other hand, he's a puppet of the corporations that Paddy Chayefsky was upset about. How much of Howard Beale was Paddy Chayefsky?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I mean, not the insane part, let's say. I mean, I think the movie draws a very clear distinction as to when Howard Beale, you know, loses his mind, and that the Mad as Hell speech actually comes after that. And there's as much Chayefsky in Howard Beale as there is in Max Schumacher, you know, the William Holden character, who, you know, as everybody else is running to their window and screaming, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, you know, there's Holden, you know, kind of sitting there shaking his head in despair and realizing that, you know, some kind of Rubicon has been crossed. And I think Chayefsky is there in that scene, too. I mean, he's seeing the rapid pace of technology and especially communication technology and realizing that, you know, the people by and large are not really thinking about, well, you know, how do I get my information and, you know, who do I trust to deliver it to me?
And Chayefsky actually created the network. This fictional network has a character. It had, what, a corporate structure and a full broadcast schedule, right?
That's right. I mean, and these are details that don't even really turn up in the movie. But before, you know, he felt that he could write the script, he felt that he had to kind of fully flesh out this whole operation. So he drew up for himself, you know, these whole, like, organizational charts with, you know, names and titles for, you know, every, you know, high-level employee at the company, and even made up a whole programming grid of what would have been airing on, you know, this fictional UBS channel at like every half hour of prime time. And, you know, these are things that, again, they don't, you know, you as viewers would never even see in the movie, but that he felt, you know, he had to have this information at his disposal to create this world.
You quote, I think it was Chayefsky's son, as saying, well, this wasn't really a satire of TV. It was TV here was a metaphor for society and the corporate world. It really seems like it's a satire of TV as you look at it and as you write about how much Chayefsky disliked the television landscape.
Well, I think that was certainly one major concern for him, or, you know, I mean, certainly one very strong motivating factor for him. But I think he did genuinely believe that it was telling a larger story about, you know, corruption and alienation. And that's, I mean, that's very present, you know, in the sort of, you know, the love triangle story among Holden and Faye Dunaway and Beatrice Straight, that, you know, Holden, you know, leaving his wife for this programming executive, even as she's trying to, you know, steal away his show. And that, you know, even when Holden dismisses Dunaway at the very end of the movie, when he tells her, you know, you're television incarnate. And, you know, there's a sort of a duality to that speech, that he's using all this language that could certainly apply to a human being, but is also very true of television. And so, you know, he's kind of blowing off both the person and the medium.
We're talking with Dave Itzkoff, author of Mad as Hell. It's about the making of the movie Network and the media future it portrayed. When we come back, we'll talk about whether it was prophetic, how much of what was in the movie is just part of everyday life here in the United States. And you can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of the film? Did it make you think and look at the different at the media in a different way? Where do you see the influence of Network in today's media, maybe in today's movies? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about the 1976 movie Network, how it got made, and the media environment it portrayed. Dave Itzkoff is with us talking about his new book, Mad as Hell. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think of the movie Network? Do you think it accurately portrayed, if not the media of the time, the mid-1970s? The media of our time. 800-642-1234 is the number. We have Charlie on the line with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I must say Network is one of my favorite movies of all time. In fact, it came out when I was 7, and I've come to the movie several times and always come away at how fresh it is. I mean, from what was once Saudi Arabia could be Japan of the 90s, and which could be China today. The feminism issues that are brought up by Faye Dunaway are still as talked about now as they were back then, and the news media is totally entertainment. You see that now as it was becoming in the movie. I was just going to ask our guest, how did Patty think of it? Did he intend it to be as timeliness a movie as it is, because it's just fascinating. Even the terrorism issues
Charlie,
are brought up.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Dave, how did it stay so timely, he wonders.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, Chayefsky would probably give you a different answer depending upon, you know, what day of the week and what time of day you asked him. I think on some days, you know, he did see this as, you know, a very direct sort of comment on what he thought was going to happen to the media if people weren't more careful, that was sort of the intent of the film. And on other days, he might tell you, no, it was I was aiming for something bigger and broader, and it's not just about television. But you know, I at the risk of, you know, oversimplifying, I mean, I think, you know, he was just, you know, I mean, he was somebody who wasn't necessarily inclined to see the upside or the better side of humanity. That it wasn't hard for him to look at what was going on in his present day and just sort of, you know, to see it through a somewhat pessimistic lens or a skeptical lens and just extrapolate a little bit that, you know, if we didn't if we didn't treat the subject of news with a kind of dignity, that this is what was going to happen.
Charlie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Dave, in your book, you write that Network, quoting here, provided a roadmap for the unraveling of the monolithic broadcasting companies, the diminishment of their once mighty news operations, and a path to a fragmented and unrecognizable media environment that the industry would follow almost to the letter over the next 40 years. Talk about how that has played out since the making of Network almost 40 years ago.
Sure. And I mean, again, remember that this is all happening in a three network landscape before, you know, cable TV or the internet even exists. But, you know, the central conflict that Chayefsky is envisioning between, let's say, the Holden and Dunaway characters is one between, you know, the news operation and the entertainment operation of a network. And that's exactly what happens by the 1980s, that the larger corporations that own these networks and the networks themselves are looking at the bottom lines. They're saying that, you know, news itself can't be a loss leader anymore. It can't, you know, just provide this public service and continue to lose money for, you know, for their parent companies. And so at that point, you know, news itself has to become profitable, and that's when it becomes entertainment. And that's exactly what what transpires. Of course, another big factor is, you know, the FCC relaxing its own equal time rules, and then that allows all kinds of, opinion and, to enter into, the presentation of news, and that's when you get all these sort of latter-day Howard Beale-like figures on the airwaves.
We'll go to back to our phones now. We've got Tim on the line in Wisconsin Dells. Tim, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to mention that a relative of mine and his daughter were in that movie, and they played a part where the daughter asked the father if he thought they would really do it, and he says, go over to the window, open up the window, and listen. And that was my cousin Cindy, and she stuck her head out the window, and everyone's yelling, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it. And also, my uncle played the part when Howard Beale had his heart attack. My uncle came out, and he was the replacement newscaster. My uncle
was
Stanley Grover.
Did he play the character named Jack Snowden? Was that his character?
It's been so long since the movie that I can't really remember, but he was the replacement newscaster. He was also in Independence Day, and he had a very tiny part in Dances with Wolves.
All right, Tim, thank you for bringing that up. And that reminds me, another prominent relative in that film, Walter Cronkite's daughter.
That's right. If people remember the film this well, there's a group of left-wing radical terrorists. One of the constituents is a woman named Mary Ann Gifford. She's supposed to be a sort of a play on Patty Hearst. And she was played by a young actress named Kathy Cronkite, who was indeed the daughter of Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite was a good friend of the network director, Sidney Lumet, and may have put in a good word for his daughter, may have helped her get hired there. It's also likely the filmmakers thought that was going to maybe inoculate them from some criticism, or at least, the TV industry would think, hey, they're in on the joke if, Cronkite's own daughter can participate in the film.
And Patty Chayefsky wrote an apology, right, to Walter Cronkite after the movie came out, or at least something saying, hey, this isn't about you?
Well, exactly. That, in the run-up to the film, there was a tremendous pushback, from the TV news industry, that people were really kind of horrified by the film and offended by some of the ideas that it presented. And, Cronkite was quoted in several of these news articles. And, Chayefsky, who did not really easily apologize for anything, suddenly realizes that, maybe he has gone too far, or at least, hurt the feelings of, thoughtful people whose, help he needed to gain access to, research his movie. And so, he writes to Cronkite and also to John Chancellor just to say, hey, I never meant this movie as an attack on you or your business.
Back to our callers now. We've got Lynn on the line in Eau Claire. Lynn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Good afternoon. It's media, it seems, that now is open to the highest bidder. All forms, print, the news, television and radio. I know in the 40s and 50s during the Cold War and early 60s during the Cold War era that Hollywood kind of pretty much pandered to the right, and it seems we're doing the same thing again. And one of the epithets that we use here in my home is, well, you must get your news from Fox.
Lynn, thanks for the call. Do you think, Patty Chayefsky passed away in the early 80s, I think it was. Would he agree with Lynn?
Well, I think he would certainly agree with the assessment that, media definitely, it towed a certain line, in the post-World War II era. And, it was fortunate there was a sort of great flourishing of, mainstream filmmaking that, it was willing to tackle some very tough issues, some very controversial issues, Network being just one of several films the same year, All the President's Men came out and Marathon Man. I mean, very kind of, suspicious and paranoid films. The news environment that followed, I think, would almost certainly horrify Chayefsky, but I think he'd also be pretty horrified by, say, the internet or even something like Twitter, where a bunch of us can just go to our electronic windows and shout out whatever we want and just, create our own little electronic cacophonies in the same way that Howard Beale did.
You talked to a number of journalists and media personalities about Network, including, speaking of Fox News, Bill O'Reilly. What did he make of Network and what it meant today?
Well, I think, understandably, he is reluctant to identify himself with Howard Beale or cite Beale as an inspiration. But, I thought he had a very astute assessment of the movie, that, you know, he also read it as a kind of indictment, not only on news and broadcasters, but on audiences, mm-hmm. and on people who aren't so, you know, careful about what they watch. And I think that there is a lot of truth there. Certainly, if you watch the movie, you look at, you know, what the sort of circus that the Howard Beale show turns into at the very end, and that has as much to do with that studio audience that's in attendance and just kind of, you know, miming whatever Howard Beale tells them to do. And I think that's you know, for O'Reilly to sort of connect those dots, I thought that was very perceptive of him.
And then there's Glenn Beck, who has compared himself to Howard Beale.
That's right. he has cited Howard Beale as an inspiration. And, you know, Stephen Colbert in this book, he points out, you know, he says that, you know, Beck has cited the inspiration of people like, you know, Jesus and Gandhi and Howard Beale. And he adds, well, you know, none of those stories end well.
You know, going back, one of our earlier callers said it's still a good movie to watch. Is it? Is it still a fun movie to watch? It's been forever. Would it has some of it dated? Is it not aged well?
I know. You know, I mean, of course, I'm biased here because I wrote a book on the subject. But I'm happy to say, I mean, we've had a few screenings of the movie, you know, in conjunction with different events that I've done, and it seems like it's playing, you know, just as well as it would have in 1976. People are laughing at all, you know, all the lines that Paddy Chayefsky meant for them to find funny. But I think there's also a kind of a gallows humor that accompanies it now. That there are parts of the movie that we watch and we realize, well, this is just, you know, standard operating procedure for television now. And there's a kind of a dark humor in that we see. We're seeing a message that wasn't heeded, and you know, now we're living with the results of that.
We'll leave it there. Dave, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was Dave Itzkoff. He's culture reporter for the New York Times. His new book is Mad as Hell, The Making of Network and the Fateful Vision of the Angriest Man in Movies. You can share your thoughts if you've watched Network lately on the Central Time Facebook page, and if you think it accurately predicted our media landscape today. Coming up next, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss joins the show to share his thoughts on the third anniversary of Governor Walker signing his budget repair bill into law as part of our week-long series on Act 10.